From KPFK Pacific Hour Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacific Hour Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Republicans in the House of Representatives and even the Senate have been unable to disavow the racist, violent, and conspiratorial members of their party, whether it is newly elected QAnon conspiracist Marjorie Taylor Greene or former President Donald Trump. The appalling state of American politics has once more centered and empowered ideologies that had been relegated to the margins. My guest calls it the Nazification of the Republican Party. Loretta J. Ross is an associate professor at Smith College in the Program for the Study of Women and Gender, where she teaches courses on white supremacy, human rights, and more. She has co-written three books on reproductive justice, Undivided Rights, Women of Color Organized for Reproductive Justice, as well as Reproductive Justice and Introduction, and Radical Reproductive Justice, Foundations, Theory, Practice, Critique. Her forthcoming book is called Calling In the Calling Out Culture. She's the former national coordinator for the Sister Song Women of Color Reproductive Justice Collective, and she joins me to discuss her new piece just published in Counterpunch titled The Nazification of the Republican Party. Welcome to the program, Loretta.
Thanks for having me on your show.
So it seems as though these calls for unity from the Republican Party, as the House voted to impeach Donald Trump for a second time, you know, on the surface of it, might be met as, well, sure, that's reasonable. We're such a polarized, divided country. We should indeed try to unify. But how should we view what the Republicans, from the, you know, the idea of unity when it's coming from Republicans, given everything that's happened in the last 4 years, and specifically on January 6th?
Well, I think we should view it through the lens of history, because in 1923, Hitler led an insurrection against the German government, and he was arrested, four people got killed, and he only served less than a year in jail because people were calling for unity. They didn't think that his party should be taken that seriously, that his crazy conspiracy theories should be taken seriously, nor should the people who empowered and enabled him be taken seriously. Well, he only served a year in jail because of premature calls for unity, and 10 years later, he had taken over the German government, and we know what happened after that. And so you can't have unity without justice and accountability. You can't have a premature rush to leniency until people are held accountable for the harms that they've done, and certainly the deaths that have happened in their wake, the people who are harmed by this continuing drum roll of conspiracy theories, and the people who literally say, if we can't permanently control democracy, we'd rather overthrow it. Because it only becomes an issue when it comes to counting the votes of everybody who's not white. So we're in the middle of a continuing civil war. I don't think we're in a second civil war. I think that if we had held the people in 1865 accountable, we wouldn't have seen the Confederate flag in the Capitol in 2021. And I don't want to be one of those people 100 years from now where my descendants are asking, why didn't you take care of this then? Because we need to learn from history. You take care of fascists immediately, or they become a bigger threat later on, because the only language they know is violence.
Going back to what you were citing with Germany, the word Nazi became anathema, became a, you know, linked to pariah status. But that didn't happen automatically, right? That happened because there were the Nuremberg trials. That happened because there was a lengthy and deep cultural shift that was deliberately brought about by society, by German society, and even the international society, saying that they unequivocally reject fascism and the Nazi Party's ideology, right? It took a lot of work.
Well, the critique I offer is that these people who are, in fact, Nazis and fascists have been coddled since the 1950s by the Republican Party, starting with the John Birch Society, starting with the segregationists of the South, the anti-abortionists, the anti-feminist, the abortion violent people. I mean, the Republican Party has had over 50 years to repudiate these extremists, and they've chosen not to. And so I intentionally called it the Nazification of the Republican Party, because until they learn that they need to clean up their house and not force Democrats to do it for them, then if they don't want to be called Nazis, stop hanging out with them, stop coddling them, stop embracing them and giving them standing ovations like Marjorie Taylor Greene within your House caucus, when you really need to be holding yourself up to the mirror of history and see if you want to be one of those collaborators and enablers of fascism, because we will have our own version of the Nuremberg trials at some point. And do you want to stand in front of that kind of judgment simply because you just grasped for power so much you didn't care about the fact that you were embracing people who are violent, murderous, and really want to overthrow democracy? I mean, is that who you want to be?
There are some segments of the left, and I don't know if you've encountered this at all, who see an attack on the far right Trump extremists as opening the door towards similar attacks on the left. For example, when Twitter banned Trump, there was a fear that, oh, now Twitter's going to use this as an excuse to ban Black Lives Matter leaders, although, of course, they'd already been doing that. When Canada declared the Proud Boys as a terrorist organization, you got a backlash, even from the left, by people who said this is a dangerous precedent. Remember how Muslims were all labeled terrorists after September 11th. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, as a Black person in America, we found that the U.S. government needs no excuse for coming after us. I mean, so the part of the left that's afraid of that simply haven't been treated like Black people have always experienced. We've always had a suppression of our freedom of speech. I mean, Colin Kaepernick knelt and he got blacklisted. I mean, so if I'm not, the Republicans and the right wing does what they want to do because of who they are, not because of what we do. And so this fear that they're going to do it worse to us because they're held accountable themselves is a fear that talks about, and I hate to say this, internalized white supremacy on the left. But if you stand in my shoes and you watch people getting beaten and murdered for trying to vote, if you watch fire departments being run by Klansmen who let Black children die in fires because they didn't feel the need to save Black lives, from our perspective, the white left needs to get over itself, because it's been happening all along. What may be different is that they now have you in the crosshairs. So I'm not sure if I can say, don't punish people who murder and kill my people for fear that they will come and punish us worse. They're already punishing us.
So when we also see that equivalence from the right, how should we respond? Because immediately Republicans like to draw a commonality, you know, saying to Democrats, yes, the Capitol riots were terrible, but no worse than the violence and property destruction we saw associated with Black Lives Matter protests last year. How do you respond to that?
I don't believe in false equivalences or whataboutism. I mean, first of all, the people in Congress had a chance to do better. They know better, and they chose not to do better. So I'm going to always call them out, and I'm not going to fall into their narrative of a false equivalence, that people protesting the callous and unaccountable murder of Black people, we weren't protesting white votes. We were protesting the murder of our people. And I'm not going to be equated with people whose only thing that they suffered was not getting the president who lost the election, empowering him to overturn it. I'm not going to buy that false equivalence, and I'm not going to lean into that narrative. And nobody who thinks they stand for human rights should be fooled by this false equivalence and that narrative.
It seems as though moral clarity should be fairly easy, right? If Trump and, and Trumpism is so directly linked to, well, the Confederate flags, the, you know, KKK, QAnon, that family of ideologies, of thoughts, that sort of part of the right political spectrum should be as reviled as the Nazis of Germany. Do you think we're going to look back on this time and denounce every Trump supporter the way in which, you know, the Germans who joined the Nazi party were denounced or even allowed the worst aspects of the Nazi party to happen without challenging them?
Well, I'm not going to denounce every Republican, just like I don't denounce the ordinary Germans who underestimated the threat from the Nazis. People can make mistakes. It's not that they made mistakes, it's whether they're willing to do better the next time. So I'm not holding them to a mistake-free standard. I'm holding them to an accountability standard, meaning that if you say that, oh, I was fooled by this guy and now I've woke up and don't hit the snooze button, and I'm ready to rejoin the rest of us who believe in facts and not conspiracy theories, I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. So I don't have to use a broad brush to repaint every Republican as a Nazi. I'm saying that if you hang out with Nazis and you don't repudiate them, then you run a severe risk of being tainted by that Nazi tag. And there's an easy way to solve that problem. Repudiate them. Call it out. Say that this does not represent you. Tell me what you stand for, and I have no problem separating the fascists from the people being manipulated by fascists.
We do see more and more, at least individual cases, because they're getting media attention, of people who were sucked in by the QAnon conspiracy theory, have their eyes opened because the predictions that were made about, you know, Trump declaring martial law, remaining president, getting Biden and all the Democrats arrested, obviously didn't play out on January 20th as these people were told it would play out. For some, it resulted in them simply readjusting their conspiracy to fit the reality, and for others, it did open their eyes. And yet, you still have the Republican Party. These are elected officials defending Marjorie Taylor Greene, a woman who called for Nancy Pelosi to be shot. Kevin McCarthy this week, the House Minority Leader, claimed he didn't know anything about QAnon, even though last year he very specifically denounced it. I mean, these are very disingenuous claims by elected officials, right? These aren't rank and file Republicans. These are people who are elected to office who should know better.
They do know better. They're manipulative liars. And I'm not unwilling to call them that. As I said, I can give you the benefit of the doubt if you were mistaken. But when you know the truth and you choose not to tell it, that's called lying. So I think the word disingenuous is too mild a word. Because I think people who abuse their power and manipulate vulnerable people should be held accountable for that. But I also, the QAnon people, I kind of make an analogy to the Y2K people who all thought that the world was going to come to an end when we flipped from the 20th century to the 21st century. If you remember that mass hysteria at the time. And so there's always people who are vulnerable to an explanation for this bewildering world that leans into their opinions and their fears that they already have. I understand it. I have sympathy for it. And I'm willing to call them in because I understand being afraid. Lord knows I understand about fear and how it can make you land at a false solution. But I separate them from the people who know better and who manipulate fearful people so that they can make money and be in power. I don't have a brief for them.
One of Marjorie Taylor Greene's bizarre and dangerous claims was blaming wildfires that we saw last year on secret Jewish space lasers. This was something she posted to Twitter. You teach courses about white supremacy and the links between anti-Semitism and anti-Black racism. Can you explore that further? Here we are in 2021, and we're still discussing rampant anti-Semitism and anti-Black racism in this country, and those two are deeply linked, right?
Well, you need to recognize that anti-Semitism, as it developed and was practiced in Europe, is a foundational building block for anti-Black racism. And it started when the Christians of Europe went from defining themselves as a religion to a race of people. And that's where the whole concept of whiteness came, even though Christians were both Black, Brown, Muslim. I mean, there were many different races of people within Christianity, just like there were many races of people within Judaism and within Islam. So, but when you started seeing religions become racialized, that's where you have to understand how anti-Semitism became the template for anti-Black racism, for Islamophobia, for a lot of the things we see today have their antecedents, their origins, based on economic decisions that then got religiously justified. Because when Europe decided to turn what had been a very profitable trade relationship with the Arab world and with Africa into a relationship of plunder and piracy, that's when the whole racialization of people's religions started happening, when the early pogroms against Jews started happening, because these kings of Europe owed the Jewish merchants too much money. So if they decided that they were disposable people, then they didn't have to pay them back. And so we have to go way back before 1619 to understand how the ideology of white supremacy developed and how to justify that ideology. The white identity was created, because here before that time, it was Christians, Muslims, and Jews, and people who practiced traditional non-other religions, like, you know, African religions and stuff like that. And so when I teach this in my course, I make sure people understand that white supremacy is an ideology, while the white identity is just an identity. You don't, you know, all white supremacists aren't white, and all people who are white are not white supremacists. It's a body of ideas, and that has evolved into fascism that we need to challenge no matter what our identities are. And it has so many components, like anti-Semitism and biological determinism and racism and sexism and transphobia and xenophobia. I could go on with the list. But it is a totalizing system that comprises a worldview. It is not just simply who you're born or who you love. And so we tend to under-theorize what we're up against.
Loretta, 4 years ago, and even before that, we also saw that there was not as much attention on the left and among American progressives on the sort of non-Black American progressive wing to understand racial injustice as central to our demands. And when Trump came in, riding the wave of deep racial resentment, of anti-immigrant hysteria, of anti-Black racism, it seemed to open the eyes of a lot of Americans who consider themselves liberals, white liberals in particular, I think finally seemed to see how central the issue of racial justice was to this nation's body politic. Again, going back to what we started talking about, how there's never been a reconciliation around the white supremacist origins of this nation. Today, we have, you know, a president who talks about racial justice and who centers the issue in many different ways. You know, even he'll bring it up even when talking about climate change, for example. Hopefully, of course, this will go beyond lip service and into actual action. But are you at least heartened by the fact that many Americans clearly see that this idea of equality with people of color is truly what scares enough white Americans that they are willing to choose fascism over democracy?
Well, even Nancy Pelosi said that they were choosing their whiteness over democracy. So when it finally got through to Nancy Pelosi, I'm like, yeah, she got it. But towards white America, I tend to feel that they're in a panic. because particularly the ones that didn't vote for Trump, let's say the ones that still deal with facts, they're in a panic because they had 400 years to study for a test that's tomorrow. You could have learned this a long time ago. The way it has been a constant brainwashing of white America to support this edifice called white supremacy is sad. And nobody white today can be blamed for the system, just like, you know, if you move into a house with bad plumbing, like Isabel Wilkerson says, you're not responsible for the fact that the house has bad plumbing. But if you plan on living in that house, you might want to fix the plumbing. Mm. And so if you plan on living in this democracy, you might want to fix this thing called white supremacy, because it is the gravest threat to whether or not America can become the country it should have been all along. But it has never been so. And that's been made more clear the minute Trump came down that golden escalator as a symptom of white supremacy, not the cause of it, because it started with Native American genocide, the enslavement, the rape of the land, and all the other parts of it that we are now seeing bear fruit and are continuing as the competing narrative of, is America a country of liberty and freedom, or is America a country of making money through repression and oppression?
Finally, you write in your piece, The Nazification of the Republican Party, Trump is a white supremacist. That he is also a deranged narcissist is really incidental. Do you worry that if we do not take steps to denounce white supremacy, denounce the Republican Party as it's in its current configuration, as essentially equivalent to Nazis and Nazism and embracing a type of Nazism, that we will get a more effective white supremacist in the near future, somebody less bumbling and foolish and less of a joke than Trump is?
Well, I think Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz are auditioning for the role myself right now. And wow. Maybe Kevin McCartney. Yeah. McCarthy. I mean, I think that they're auditioning to be a more competent Trump. But the reason I wrote that line was because I woke up one morning and all the mainstream media was talking about this being a psychological problem. And so just like they say that violence against women is a psychological problem and not a rape culture and all this other stuff, I'm saying, y'all are so willing to fall into a narrative that avoids in every kind of way you can find saying and identifying the ideology of white supremacy, largely because y'all have bought into that ideology. Because white supremacy is the ideology, but white privilege is its practice. And so they don't want to hold themselves accountable for participating in this system of injustice. So they just want to say that 71 million people had a mass psychosis and we need 71 million therapists or something. And I wrote that line, that Trump was crazy is one thing, but he was also a white supremacist. And that's what the real issue is, because you can find someone who's less obviously deranged, who's more competent, and we could be even in a worse situation if we misdiagnose the problem and apply a false solution.
Loretta, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your Counterpunch article from our website. Really appreciate your time.
Would you put my website up there too?
Absolutely. Please give it out.
LorettaJRoss.com.
And that's LorettaJRoss.com.
Ross.com.
Definitely. We'll link to that. Thank you so much for your time. My guest has been Loretta Ross, Associate Professor at Smith College in the Program for the Study of Women and Gender, where she teaches courses on white supremacy, human rights, and more. Her forthcoming book is called Calling In the Calling Out Culture. We've been discussing her new article in Counterpunch titled The Nazification of the Republican Party. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.